The Starting Lineup with Tyler Ivins and Will West on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Will S. Derek Kane here with you. It is hour number three, the starting lot of 99.1, the Sports Animal. Johnny Majors passed away yesterday at the age of 85. We got tipped off. I want to thank everybody that sent us messages yesterday, kind of told us this was happening. We didn't want to get it out there until the family was ready, honestly. So that's I don't want anybody to think that we were trying to disrespect their willingness to try to pass along information to us and stuff like that, but some things are better than being first on something. Does that make sense? Right. And it seems like, because right after we reported, every outlet went with it. So it seems like everybody had that information as well. But there's no reason to disrespect. I mean, somebody's life, right? So there's no reason to try to be like, I'm the one that got it first, that somebody passed away. So thank you to everyone who reached out yesterday. We really, really, really appreciate that. We just kind of held on that until the family was ready. And so I was glad that it got to be Jimmy was the one that put out the first thing about it, because Jimmy was closer to Johnny Majors than anybody else probably was that was in the media. And so he and Johnny were tight. And so it was cool that he got to be the one that kind of to break that news. Johnny Majors, for somebody my age, when I was growing up, Tennessee football was Johnny Majors. Phillip Fulmer, was the offensive coordinator and came later. And it was, but Johnny Majors was the guy, from hearing from my dad and my grandfather, that, and I'm the third, right? So we got Bill West, Bill Jr., then you got me, and I'm Will. This was something that was always, how good of a player Johnny Majors was drilled into my head from the time I'm a little kid. My earliest memories of Tennessee football, I think my earliest memory of Tennessee football was the 82 game. I was in kindergarten. The 82 game against Alabama, when they broke the 12-game losing streak to Bear Bryant. It's the only game I ever remember watching that Bear Bryant coached. I'm 43, so I guess I was 5 at that time. That was my first memory of Tennessee football, and it is Johnny Majors, and it was Johnny Majors being carried out on the player's shoulders, and that whole moment was something that was just will always be etched into my brain. But Johnny Majors was Tennessee through and through, right? From the time that he played football here at Tennessee, he went to Pitt and won a national championship. And think about how wild this is. Johnny Majors won a national championship at Pitt and then left instead of coming back with his national championship team. He left to go coach Tennessee because that's how much Tennessee meant for him. The thought of that happening, right? Look, Dabo Swinney, right? Dabo Swinney's an Alabama guy. Dabo Swinney would not win his first title at Clemson and then jump and go to Alabama the next year. There was no chance that was going to happen. So it's just amazing that Johnny Majors was willing to do that. And it shows you how much Tennessee mattered and how much Tennessee meant to Johnny Majors that he was willing to do that. I get to meet Tony Dorsett because he was in town to see his guy Johnny one. That's how, and Tony Dorsett, when I was a little kid, Tony Dorsett was my favorite player in the entire world. And so to be able to meet a childhood hero through that was just absolutely awesome. My first interaction ever with Johnny Majors was 2008, and I didn't actually interact with him. But in 2008, I'm covering practice for the first time, I guess 12 years ago, at UT, and I'm waiting for, and I'd never done it before. I was just producing at the time and just started producing. And so I'm sitting there waiting for practice to open up. And they're finished up practice. They've got the gates closed, the outside practice facility. They open it up. We write that on a list and tell them when they come around and write to us, at least they did at the time. I haven't covered practice in a while. But you told them who the players you wanted to interview. They'd give you what portion of the players of those that they could make available for interviews. And the assistant coaches were going that day, and that's why I was there. So I roll up. I'm waiting to roll into the practice field to get this done, and I feel a hand on my shoulder, and it's Mark Nagy. And he pulls me over to the side, and about the time he pulls me over to the side, this sedan flies by us and right exactly where I was standing. And I look over at Mark, and he says something to the effect of, I mean, I think he would have stopped for you, but just in case. And I'm like, that is fair. He's like, it is your first time here. Coach Majors will absolutely zip it out of this parking lot. That was my first interaction ever with Coach Majors. My second interaction with Coach Majors was about a year later, or maybe even a bit later that fall. But I'm on an elevator going up this charity event, and I rolled in late because I still had to work, and I got to the event a little late. And Coach Majors, you had to be on a specific elevator to get to this floor in the penthouse area where Coach Majors, where the charity thing was. So there was a specific elevator, and he'd got on the wrong elevator and had to come back down and was going around. So it's just me and Coach Majors. And I don't really like get starstruck unless it's somebody that I looked up to when I was a kid. So it's just me and Johnny Majors. We get on that elevator, and I'm being awkwardly silent at the time, and I'm probably making a fool of myself without saying a word. And I'm totally starstruck by Johnny Majors there, like even though I was 30 years old at the time. And we get on this elevator, and we hit the button to go up there, and I tell them, hey, yeah, this is what they told me that we have to do for us to go up. And I look over, and I'm being weird. I know I'm being awkward and weird. And I look over Coach Majors, and I say, Coach, I got to tell you, I'm a huge fan. And he just looks at me and goes, I know. And that was Johnny Major's response to me saying that. And then he started asking me about how I thought the food was going to be there. And we started talking about different charitable events and how good the food was at those type of charitable event versus the set of their charitable event, depending on who the caterer was. Johnny Majors was a different dude. He was built differently. He had those loud plaid jackets. He would, if he thought it, he's going to say it, and he didn't care who liked it or who didn't like it. But man, that guy won football games, and that guy cared about Tennessee. And so I never saw a time that Coach Majors didn't take time for the fans. He always did. Just always did an amazing job when it came to that thing. And so, and again, for me, for people my age, and like, again, the older millennials to through the baby boomer generation, Johnny Majors was our first thought of Tennessee football coach. It was Johnny Majors when we were growing up, Eric.
Yeah, and it was a fun day yesterday, just kind of, you know, rehashing all the stories, all the memories of Johnny Majors. And, you know, it's interesting because I'm a lot younger than you, and so I don't have any memories of Johnny Majors certainly playing, but I don't even have memories of Johnny Majors coaching. So everything about Johnny Majors, what I've heard, what I've read, and from what I've seen, but a heck of a player when he was here. And then just seeing how the players loved him. And a lot of it, you know, something else Jimmy like touched on when he met with me yesterday and we spoke on it. And then this is the case for a lot of athletes, and certainly been the case for me throughout my athletic career. A lot of times you don't like the coach when you're there because he's so hard on you, or he or she is so hard. He expects so much from you, expecting excellence. And so a lot of the players were stubborn and might not have understood, you know, what you're getting out of it. You know, you're getting out of your coaching at the time, but years later in life, you're like, man, I learned so many lessons there, taught me to be the man I am today, the you know, and you go on. And so that was a lot of the stories that we heard from yesterday when speaking on it. And so that just kind of speaks to the man that Johnny Majors was, not just a football coach, but a teacher, an educator, and, you know, helped kids grow up. And I mean, at the end of the day, that's what coaching's all about, and that's what it should be. That's should be what coaching's all about. It certainly is at the high school level, and we spoke on that the other day. But at the end of the day, yes, you're X's and O's. You have a passion for the game of football, but you have a passion for kids, and Johnny Majors certainly had a passion for kids.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that are in the dimensions the last 2 days trying to get us to relitigate Coach Majors versus Coach Fulmer. I'm not going to do that right now. I don't feel like that's appropriate right now to do that. Today and yesterday and today and right now, it's about celebrating the life of Johnny Majors and celebrating his contributions to the University of Tennessee, because you don't have – look, Johnny Majors won a national title at Pitt. You don't have Tennessee even having the reputation Tennessee has. And it's not been Tennessee football the last 10 years like we're used to Tennessee football the last 10, 11, 12 years. But – you don't have that reputation. And Tennessee still has a reputation nationally when you go anywhere. If I go on any show in any market in the nation, they look at Tennessee football as a big deal. That I don't know that that happened before Johnny Majors. Not like it is now. Even though it's been 12 years later, that's the type of lasting effect that he had. And he changed the Tennessee football, and where Tennessee football could get on that upward trajectory to get back to winning a national title. That doesn't happen without Coach Majors as well. The dude was a Hall of Fame level player. He was a Hall of Fame level coach, and he was a fantastic recruiter and a great ambassador for the University of Tennessee for a very long time. We'll come back on the other side. Man, people are dragging Florida State coach Mike Norvell. If you don't know why, we'll talk about it next. This is the Starting Lineup, 99.1, the Sports Animal.
This is a Tennessee Education Lottery Sports Minute.
There, we were just talking about it right there. Johnny Majors, gone at the age of 85, a two-time SEC MVP, an All-American as a tailback for the Vols in the 1950s, a Heisman runner-up, and a College Football Hall of Fame voted in there as a player in 1987. Majors went on to make three stops as a head coach, winning a national championship at Pitt before returning to Rocky Top. At Tennessee, Majors won three SEC titles, about a 7-4 bowl record, including a win over Miami in the Sugar Bowl. They capped that magical 1985 season. Former Tennessee guard Jalen Johnson, who said in April he would transfer to ETSU as a graduate student, will not be joining the Buccaneers program. ETSU coach Jason Shea told News Channel 11 last night in the Tri-Cities. Johnson, who is now back on the market, played in 31 games for Tennessee this past season, averaging 15 minutes an outing. Meanwhile, former ETSU standout Bo Hodges is transferring to Butler. The 6'5" guard will be ineligible next season due to transfer rules, but finished last year ranked among the Southern Conference's top 15 in scoring, rebounding, assists, steals, field goal percentage, and blocks. It's 8:11. We're going to check out the roads, the interstates with Pete Michaels Traffic. Good morning. I'm Eric Kane.
Starting let up 99.1, the Sports Animal. Will West, Eric Kane here with you. 656-9900 if you want to get on board with us. If you've not seen what's going on with Florida State and Mike Norvell, goodness, it is not going well. We'll talk about that coming up in just a little bit. Bob has held patiently through the last couple of segments. Bob, we really appreciate it. Thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind here? Bob, you with us?
I'm here.
Hey, what's on your mind here, Bob?
I want to talk about the George Floyd issue and what's going on in our country. I think that because it was a white officer and a black individual, that it made the news, where if it had been anything else, it wouldn't have. And so it's made out to be a black and white issue. I know that there's racism. I know there's racial profiling. But I think if we focus on it as a black versus white issue, we're missing the biggest problem, which is we have an anger problem in our world. I lived in an area in Memphis for 6 years where I was, even though I'm white, I was a racial minority, and I was victim of several acts of violence. And my children were had their lives threatened in elementary school by other students, and they actually didn't have to go to school the last 2 weeks of the year because of it. But I never saw it as a black versus white issue. I saw it as individuals who had a problem with anger. And I think if we could just see each other as individuals rather than making it a black and white issue and realize that the problem is anger and violence, that we could come together a lot better and deal more with the bigger issue. If you think we don't have an anger problem in America and in our world, I would ask you, have you driven in your car recently? Because, you know, road rage wasn't even a term 20 years ago. So I admit and realize that racism is a problem, but I think if we focus on that, we're overlooking the bigger problem, which is an anger problem and violence. I think that the response to the killing has been worse than the killing was itself, because more people have died in addition to all the destruction of property.
Thank you for the phone call, Bob. And it was eloquently put what you said. I would say, look, I'm not saying... Here's the tough part, right? It's okay to take a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B and say both are true. And I think that it's become tough, like in the first takeification of society, for whatever reason, it's hard, I think, for people to look at that. And I'm not saying that you are, Bob, but here's what I am saying. Yes, there's absolutely an anger problem. Yes, there's also a racial problem. I mean, there is. And would it be better if we were to remove race from it? Yeah, it would become easier to probably fix. But it's hard to do that when it's at a disproportionate rate, black people are dying. And here's the biggest thing, too. Even when caught on film, when it's at a disproportionate rate, black people, the people aren't convicted. That's a different portion of it, too. Is when, I mean, I know I've seen a lot of people that I went to high school with and things like that share, this white officer was killed by this black guy. Why isn't anybody protesting that? That black guy went to jail, and he was prosecuted for it, right? There was an 8-minute, 46-second video that we had of a police officer killing George Floyd. Both the state and independent autopsies looked at it and said, this is murder, this is homicide, and that's how I got charged. The other officers that stood there and did nothing didn't get charged, and for how long? And one is a black officer, one's an Asian officer. So it's okay. I think we can look at this and say there's an anger problem in the U.S. There is. There's a race problem in the U.S. There absolutely is. There's a policing problem in the U.S. That's one thing I think we've learned about this that I hope that people have learned, and my concern is that they haven't. Is that, I mean, we're watching on national television broadcasts, we're watching police in some cities, and grace of God, we don't deal with this in East Tennessee. We got good police in East Tennessee. I've never even heard it, and I'll be honest, I'm the guy that in East Tennessee, somebody would have told me if it happened to them. Hadn't heard a word, but because I'll say it, you know what I mean? And that's good and bad sometimes. But, I mean, we're watching on national television over and over and over again, police assault people. It just frankly assault them. At times laughing after they do that, shooting a woman's eye out in Minnesota who was a member of the press, looking and shooting at press that are over to the side and shooting a woman with non-lethal rounds repeatedly, and then walking off and lying about it in Louisville. I mean, we watch there are problems here. And to remove the race situation, and here's the tough part, because there were a lot of us that were raised, especially raised by parents who grew up during the civil rights movement, a lot of us were raised, don't look at the color of the skin, look at the content of the character. And it doesn't mean we don't see race. Like, I'm aware that the pigmentation in somebody else's skin is different than mine. I just don't care. Like, your shirt's also a different color. What the crap do I care about that? But I'm not going to sit and say that I have enough friends that are black friends and Hispanic friends. Like, every black friend I have has dealt with something incredibly racist and violent in some way, shape, or form. 100% of them. Every black friend I had has dealt with that with somebody from the police. All of them. Most of my white friends have not. Have I had times that the police have messed with me when I was like a punk kid? Yes. But not like to this level. And at a disproportionate rate, when it happens to black people, the person who does the violent thing gets away with it. And that's a huge difference that's happening right now. So there are a lot of different things. Like, it's okay to be outraged by what happened to George Floyd and also outraged by the police that were shot in St. Louis. It's okay to be outraged. You should be outraged by both. And that means you're a good human being. But one does not negate the other. What happened with George Floyd? What happened? Breonna Taylor was asleep in her home. The police busted in without announcing themselves in Louisville. They busted into her home, didn't announce themselves, out of uniform, and the boyfriend thought somebody was breaking in, and so he got his gun to defend their property, and the police shot and killed him and her. She was asleep, and nothing happened to those police officers that did that. That's not okay. That's not okay at all. And it's okay to look at this and say, okay, let's be honest, if that was a white person, would something have happened? I have to look at it and say it probably would have. So I think for whatever reason, when it comes to this, where I'm struggling is I don't understand why it can't be both. Because I see people saying, you should just completely dismiss the violence and the looting that's happening. No, violence and looting's bad, right? Vandalism and looting's bad. That's wrong. And people should go to jail when they do that. At the same time, that doesn't dismiss the entire peaceful protests that are happening in all 50 states and 18 other countries around the nation, because enough is enough. Both can be true. And so both can be true that we have, or all of the above could be true, that we have an anger problem in the U.S. We have a racial problem in the U.S. We do. We have an anger problem in the U.S. We do. We have a policing problem in a lot of cities in the U.S. We do. I mean, we had it in Camden, New Jersey, and Columbus, Ohio, and Philadelphia, Columbus, Ohio. Let's just take that, right? On Monday in Columbus, Ohio, the police officers showed up. They covered their badge numbers, and they covered their body cams. And we all knew it because every media outlet there said that. And there ended up being clashes that happened between police officers and protesters the entire day. The next day, police officers showed up without that being the case, just sat there, did their thing. Some of the police officers actually marched with the protesters, and there were no problems whatsoever, right? So I think that we all, to some extent, know a solution, but just because one thing's too true doesn't mean something else isn't true as well. So there are absolutely positively racial problems in this country. And I'm at a point right now where I'm not even going to hear the other side that there's not. It's just inaccurate that there aren't that. Now, it doesn't mean what you're saying is not true as well, Bob, because the people that were racist towards your kids where they didn't have to go to school, that's a racial problem too that has to be fixed. And so we need to fix these racial fractures that are happening in society. Look, I'm a Christian. And I shared this video, if you saw it on Twitter yesterday. There's a guy named Carl Lentz who's a pastor of Hillsong, New York. And he said this. He said that, you know, I'm at a Christian group, and I said Black Lives Matter. And people were like, whoa, 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 all lives matter. And he said, so I had to explain to them. I was like, okay, do Black Lives Matter? And all of the people there said, well, yes, but. He said, well, hang on with the but. Everybody knows all lives matter. Everybody does. But you can't say all lives matter unless you're also willing to say Black Lives Matter, because all lives don't matter unless Black Lives Matter. And so, and that's also not the thing we're dealing with at this exact second. I mean, yes, all lives matter. Right now, we're dealing with the black part of it. We can deal with two things at one time. And I think in this country, we've got to start doing that again. I would also say, like, one of the things he brought up was Jesus, and when he's doing, you know, in the Sermon on the Mount, it says, blessed are the poor. Nobody stopped Jesus and said, well, not just the poor Jesus, right? That's the same situation. We can keep moving on to more than one thing at a time because we're legitimate, responsible adults. But I'm not going to remove the idea that what's happening in this country is not real. I'm not going to at all minimize the experience of what African-American people and people of color in this country are dealing with, because it's happening. And I'm going to be real. When it comes to things like systemic racism, and I don't know if I've ever said this on the air, but I'm just going to say it and we'll see what happens. I had no clue, because I don't know if people of color know this or not. White people that are racist hide their racism from other white people, because white people won't have it either when they see it. But until I got to the point where I was in rooms, usually because of charitable events, not because I'm cool, but because we have really good ratings here on the station and on our show, and until I got into rooms with like the ultra wealthy, I had no idea systemically how bad racism was. I didn't know that it existed like that, because I hadn't heard anybody under the age of 80 say something like that since the 2000s started. It was at a completely different level. And it made me realize, if the people that are the CEOs of this company and started and founded this company and do all these things, if they're just straight up racist like this, and there's a lot of charities I've just straight up left, I won't have anything to deal with because they were racist. And it was wild to see. But it makes me realize why I can get a job a lot more quickly a lot of times than an African-American person can in these private companies. And it made me understand that a little bit more. And what we can't do here is, let's not minimize what's going on with the people in the African-American community. And here's the biggest thing, too, to take it away from this. The African-American community is hurting. Like, they're hurting. You got to be a good person. When you see somebody that's hurting, we try to find out, okay, let me listen to you. Let me see what you got. Why are you hurting? What can I do to stop that hurting? Because over and over and over again, when black people die, even on video, people don't go to jail. The guys in Savannah that shot that guy on video, the DA had it for 2.5 months. And because the guy that was there that shot the guy had used to be an investigator for that DA, they didn't do anything with it. It finally went to a defense attorney in town who leaked the information publicly to try to get something done about it. Because for 2.5 months, two guys that shot a black guy in cold blood, the middle of the street on video, the DA wouldn't do anything about it. Let's be honest. If that was me or you, they would have. And that's the unfortunate part of what's going on right now. And I want people to understand. Does that mean that things don't happen to white people? No, it doesn't mean things don't happen to white people. Does that mean there aren't other problems that we need to deal with as well with this? Yes, there are other problems. But we can take each one of these one moment at a time. And we don't need to disparage the African-American community that's hurting in the middle of their hurting, because we also have issues with these other things. We'll come back on the other side. Star Bench Cut is next. It's the starting line of 99.1 The Sports Animal. Starting line of 99.1 The Sports Animal. SBC time on the starting lineup. Let's do it, Eric Kane.
How do you rank them? It's time for Mary... Whoops. The FCC says we can't do it that way. Let's play Start, Bench, or Cut on the starting lineup. Powered by Heritage Realty. Locally owned and operated with over 50 years of experience in the Knoxville market, where today's technology meets traditional customer service. Heritage Realty.
All right, Will West, best player Johnny Majors ever coached. Star Bench Cut, Reggie White, Tony Dorsett, Willie Gault.
So, that is a good one. Start Reggie White. Reggie White was like a 13-time Pro Bowler, dude. That guy was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Start Reggie White, and that is saying something, because Tony Dorsett's an all-time great. Bench Tony Dorsett, cut Willie Gault.
Yeah, man, that's really tough, but I think you've got to start Reggie White as well. bench Tony Dorsett and cut Gaul. I think that's, yeah, that's the same order. Yeah, I'll roll with that. Luke Kuechly was officially put on the retired list yesterday by the Panthers. Best NFL inside linebacker this century. Star bench cut. Kuechly, Ray Lewis, Brian Urlacher.
Patrick Willis, no love. No love for Patrick Willis.
I like Patrick Willis, but longevity, I mean, he really didn't have the
but
longest.
He walked away. Yeah, he walked away. But yeah. I would have taken his play over any of their play.
Really?
And that is to say, that's not to say that he's not, that the other guys aren't incredible. I'm going to start Ray. I'm going to bench Kuechly. I'm going to cut Brian Urlacher.
Yeah, I'm going to go that order as well. That's tough because, you know, little young Eric Kane, little 54, the first time he played football because of Brian Urlacher. That was my guy. Really like Brian Urlacher. It was tough. Super Bowl, whatever it was, whenever the Colts played the Bears down in Miami in the rain. That was a toughie because, you know, you want Peyton to win, but, you know, Urlacher was on the other side.
That was your dude?
That was my guy.
The difference with Ray was his ability to close space. He could do it at a quicker pace than these other guys could. Mm-hmm. I think that was the difference maker between he and Kuechly for me.
Also, the thing about Ray Lewis was, you know, you're taught form and stance and technique and all this stuff, like growing up playing football. And then you look at Ray Lewis, it's like his stance is poor. He does not get down. He plays straight up, but he's just a man. And he's just, if you have that ability, go and do it. So, I mean, that's what I learned about Ray Lewis at an early age. Biggest win of the Johnny Majors era at Tennessee. Bama in 82, snapping Tennessee's 12-game losing streak to Bear Bryant, shutting down Bo Jackson in 85, or the 86 Sugar Bowl.
It's the 86 Sugar Bowl because that announced Tennessee on the national scene when that happened. So I will start that. I will bench shutting down Bo Jackson. I'm going to cut that losing streak to Bear Bryant, even though that's like my first big prevailing memory of Tennessee college football.
Yeah, I'll go the same way. I think the Sugar Bowl, I mean, it's one of the most recognizable Tennessee wins of all time. We had it on the Tennessee Classics, the Vol Network Classics, just a couple weeks ago. I will bench shutting down Bo Jackson because he was just the best athlete in the world at that time, and then I'll cut the win over Bear Bryant, although it was a big one.
People were still asking for the commemorative DVDs of the 86 Sugar Bowl win, the 85 Sugar Bowls, 2 years ago when we were on remote. Yeah. So that is a long time still want to commemorate that when you're talking about 30 years, for gosh sakes.
ESPN personalities Adam Amin, Emmanuel Acho, and Jonathan Vilma have all recently left for FS1. The biggest loss for the four-letter network.
So I think it's Emmanuel Acho's start because of what a massive role he had quickly and earned. There's a difference on this, and I had always talked about to the young people at the station about this. Don't ever wait for somebody. You got to go take your role, right? Like you got to be so good we can't keep you off the air. And I think you've done a great job with that, Kaner. Emmanuel Acho did that. He was so good you couldn't keep him off the air on Get Up in the mornings on ESPN. So I start him. I will bench Adam Amin. I like Jonathan Vilma. You can find a lot of football players that'll give you what Jonathan Vilma gives you.
Yeah, and I mean that's nothing against Vilma, but I view that the same way you do. I mean, I think Emmanuel Acho does a fantastic. I mean, he is good. He is really good. I'll start him. I'm going to bench Adam Amin because the versatility, women's basketball, men's basketball, can do baseball. Now he's Chicago Bulls. And then I'll cut Jonathan Vilma because it's replaceable. And it's replaceable for sure. Today is National Cheese Day. Best cheese, start bench cut, cheddar, mozzarella, provolone.
I'm going to start the cheddar, bench provolone, cut mozzarella. I love mozzarella. I made a baked spaghetti last night with some mozzarella sprinkled on top of it. But I provolone on a sandwich, fantastic. Sharp cheddar is the goat. So that is the one, is the sharp cheddar for me. I got about a block and a half, I guess, in the fridge right now. And I don't mean like the massive restaurant size ones. I've got that in the fridge right now.
Just wake up in the middle of the night, go get you a big old chunk out of it.
Get some cheese, dude.
I will start cheddar. I'll bench provolone. I'll cut mozzarella as well. I just now noticed we have the same order for all of these so far. We will disagree on the last one. Are you ready?
Okay.
With Snapchat shutting down Trump's account, we must ask, what's the best social media? I link Facebook and Insta together, but I'm going to take Insta off. Let's do Facebook, Twitter, and Snapchat.
Okay, so had you done Insta there, I would have started Insta. I'm not visual, and so when other people that are, and they take, like Josh Ward's wife, if you follow her, Kelly, on Instagram, she's visual and like, so what, like random things around Knoxville that I just walk past and don't pay attention to.
Same.
She'll take a picture of it, and I'll be like, dude, that is so awesome, and I have never noticed that in my entire life, right? Yeah. So that's why I like Instagram, because it's people who It's not just influencers trying to peddle fake water. It's, you know, I mean, there are actually people who are visual that do just awesome things. And so I have a ton of respect for that. So I would have said that. Now, since you took it off, I'll start Twitter. It's the new newspaper. Twitter is. I bench Facebook and I cut Snap. I'm not cool enough for Snap. I'll be real. If I didn't do this for a living, I wouldn't have a Facebook account. But I do, and it's a great way to connect with your audience when you do this for a living. I'm not cool enough for Snapchat. I don't get the point of Snapchat. So
it's weird.
I've got an account. I don't even know the login anymore. Like, I tried for a little while, and I had friends that tried to like send me things to get me involved in it. And then one time, I ended up like trying to send something back to them, and it ended up just being a picture of my crotch because I had the camera going the wrong way. Like, I don't need all that. I'm done.
We're 6 for 6. I'll start Twitter. I will bench Facebook, and I'll cut Snapchat. Here's the thing, too. Number one, I am not, I used to be big on Instagram, used to be it, but I think I posted twice in the last year and a half. Like, I never post anymore, and quite frankly, I don't look at it that much anymore. I mean, it used to be at least a couple times a day, but sometimes if it's late at night and I hadn't checked it all day, like, I won't even go through my whole scroll because it'll take me forever to go back through the last 24 hours to see what I missed, so that's kind of annoying, and I don't post anymore, so I'm kind of out on Instagram right now, surprisingly. Twitter, as you pointed out, it's a new newspaper, love Twitter, it's my thing. Facebook has grown on me here lately. Growing up, high school, had a Facebook, got away from it in college, but now that I'm in this industry, it's a great way to connect. But I was going to think that you were going to start Facebook and you were going to bench Twitter because you have deleted your Twitter account a couple times.
Me?
Or the app at least.
Yeah, I just because I was on it too much. That's why. Yeah. And also, like, when we were in sports for a little while, I needed to just pull away. So when it comes to sport, I'll immerse myself in sports all day because that way it means for a 3-hour show, I don't have to do 6 hours of show prep. I just have to do 3 hours of show prep if I'm doing to immerse myself in sports all day long periodically. And Twitter's good for that. But when we got to the pandemic, I was doing it for that too. And so I just had to be like, okay, I'm going to log on and I will check it out every couple of hours or every 3 hours, 4 hours. I'll see what the latest news is. And that's because I was just immersing myself too much in just news, period, instead of doing what I need to do for the job. So that was a mental health thing I had become irresponsible. And if you have to cut off your right hand to keep your left hand from sitting, you do it. And that's what I had to do there.
But here's a clear example of how, you know, we all use Twitter nowadays, especially if you're in this industry. Yesterday, whenever we were texting back and forth, talking about the show for this morning, you brought up and said, hey, we need to discuss the Drew Brees thing. I was checked out. I wasn't on social media, wasn't doing sports at that time, had no clue what you were talking about, immediately picked up my phone, clicked on the Twitter icon, went to my scroll, and saw everything I needed to see. So that's where I get my info.
Look, is it a cesspool of trash? Yes, of course it is, because all social media is a cesspool of trash. But it's also the newspaper. So if you follow all the news sources on there, it's all in one spot. Avery's best friend, Ava, said to me one day when we were in the truck, I was taking them somewhere. I don't remember where I was taking them. And they were like, I think we were going to go get hibachi. And they were just like, she's like, why do dads like Twitter so much? And I'm like, I didn't realize that was a dad thing to like Twitter. But back in the day, dads loved the newspaper. And yeah. Twitter's the new newspaper. That's just kind of what it is. That is Star Bench Cut, brought to you by Heritage Realty. HeritageRealtyKnox.com, a boutique firm that focuses on you, the client, over the needs of the sales pipeline. Find out more at HeritageRealtyKnox.com. We'll come back with a final segment. Drew Brees has issued an apology. We'll talk about it next. This is the starting lineup, 99.1, the Sports Animal.
This is a Tennessee Education Lottery Sports Minute.
Sad news on Rocky Top Wednesday morning. Johnny Majors has passed away at the age of 85. Majors was a two-time SEC MVP and All-American as a tailback for the Vols in the 1950s, a Heisman front runner, and was voted in the College Football Hall of Fame as a player in 1987. Majors went on to make 3 stops as a head coach, winning a national championship at Pitt before returning to Rocky Top. At Tennessee, Majors won 3 SEC championships, compiled a 7-4 bowl record, including a win over Miami to cap that magical 1985 season with a Sugar Bowl win. Former Tennessee guard Jalen Johnson, who said in April he would transfer to ETSU as a graduate student, will not be joining the Buccaneers program. ETSU coach Jason Shea told News Channel 11 last night in the Tri-Cities. Johnson, who's now back on the market, played in 31 games for Tennessee this past year, averaging 15 minutes an outing. Meanwhile, ETSU standout Bo Hodges is transferring to Butler. 6'5" guard will be ineligible next season due to transfer rules, but finished this past campaign for the Southern Conference's top 15 in scoring, rebounding, assists, steals, field goal percentage, and blocks. And Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott pledged $1 million to improving police training and addressing systematic racism through education and advocacy in our country. 844, we're going to check out the roads with Pete Michaels Traffic. Good morning. I'm Eric Kane.
Final segment of the starting line of 99.1, the Sports Animal. Will West, Logan Ward's joining us now. Just a quick note, Logan, we don't play this song on the starting lineup. Mostly because it makes Eric Ainge happy.
No,
and Eric
I
Ainge
know.
Is our dude, but we also like to troll Eric Ainge.
So when I produced 2 weeks ago, this song got played just because I didn't have a song ready on the computer. And as soon as I hit the button to play this song, well...
Ivan's lost his
rotator.
Mind.
Well, yeah, he lost his mind, but as soon as I hit the button just now and I heard that song, I was like, oh, crap, I'm going to hear it.
So Kader's got it on a rotator is what you're telling
yes,
me.
Yes, he does. So it's not my fault. We'll blame him.
Kader needs to know where his bread's buttered. Eric Ainge is not where his bread's buttered. Come on, Kader, whose show are you producing? Okay, so Drew Brees yesterday with the comments about being against the kneeling for the national anthem, saying that he's not about disrespecting the flag. My problem, look, Drew Brees has a right to say that. My problem was, if I know, and I'm not in the NFL, that the kneeling was literally changed from sitting to disrespect the flag to kneeling to not disrespect the flag, then I know Drew Brees knows that as well. We talked about this earlier, and you can catch a podcast. We had a pretty honest discussion about kneeling, the protests, and Colin Kaepernick, because for whatever reason, nobody seems to want to tell the truth on this. I'm watching ESPN all day yesterday, and it was never about the flag. It was never about the national anthem. Kaepernick literally said during his first statement about it that, yes, it was. Now, he then changed. And when it went from, once he spoke to former Green Beret, that he found out, oh, okay, he was like, well, I don't want to disrespect the troops. Well, what can I do? And so this was what the guy suggested of, well, why don't you kneel instead? This is what we do to pay respect to somebody with another soldier when we're at their grave. So if you want to raise awareness, he tried to convince them to not do it during the national anthem. Kaepernick wouldn't do that. And he said, okay, well, then why don't you do this instead? And this was kind of a compromise of you can show respect while also raising awareness during the national anthem. So if I know it's not about the flag and the anthem anymore, then Drew Brees knows it's not about the flag and the anthem anymore. So I had a problem with Drew Brees saying that. Drew Brees has released an apology. There are some portions of it that seem to be genuine. There are other portions of it that are, I'm sorry if you got offended. There was a little bit of that apology from Drew Brees. We have a very special gentleman who was held on the line now, and we appreciate him. Buck Kelso joins us on the starting lineup. Buck, how are you, sir?
Great greetings and salutations, Will.
Hey, Buck, good to hear from you, pal. How are you?
I'm calling you from out west to say near Newburgh. We're at the Fontenot girls, Betty and Bootsy, Fontenot, me and dudes, we've been here all week. Hey, Will,
well, hey.
I just want to tell you, it brought tears to my eyes what you said about the race thing, and it did.
I appreciate it.
Let me tell you something. We can't change the world. We can't change anybody but ourselves. And when we change ourselves and the way we look at things, then we can start to change the world.
Well, very well put, Buck. Very well put.
I have my moments.
Yeah, and that was a pretty darn good one there, Buck. It's an awfully darn good one.
Well, I've been thinking prophylactically here lately. And here's another thing. I want to wish the Majors family all my prayers and sympathy. I remember Johnny, he was playing when I got back from Korea, and I went and watched him play. Back on the other subject, you know, I didn't get a lot of jobs for a lot of times when I was filling out the forms to get a job, and it would say race, and I would put human.
Yes.
Yeah, and because I'm not a NASCAR fan or Indy 500 fan, but think about it. We're all part of this big race called the human race.
Absolutely.
And when we start looking at each other and saying, let me walk a mile in your shoes, then we can start to do things. Hey, buddy, I got to tell you this before I go. And lovable losers and no-account boozers and honky-tonk heroes like Buck Kelso.
Buck, we appreciate you, buddy. Thank you for the phone call. Fantastic
buddy,
to hear from
you. Thank you, buddy.
Fantastic to hear from Buck Kelso, as always. We appreciate him coming to the program. And look, I just hope that we could. That's the one thing. And I wasn't trying to kill Bob when he called earlier. I just think he brought up, he said, well, it's not this, it's this. But Bob brought up is a legitimate issue. Now, here's the thing, man. It's okay to be, and frankly, you should be. And I don't know why we're at this place right now. Again, I think it's the first takeification of society where it's either this or that, and it's all of this or all of that. We should be outraged by the killing and the shooting of police officers, the stabbing last night in Brooklyn of police officers. We should be outraged by that, and outraged by George Floyd's murder. We should be outraged by that. We should be outraged by systemic racism, and also outraged by people who, under the guise and kind of trying to work underneath the cloak of these peaceful protests, the lootings that are happening out there. It's not okay to loot. And I don't know why people are acting like it's okay that this happened. No, it's not. That's not okay. That's a crime. They should go to jail, the people that did that. The people that were doing the vandalism in Knoxville, you saw the people that were arrested. It was 9 people. 6 of them were white kids. The other 3 were African-American. And so 2/3 were white kids that are going to go out and break stuff. Dude, they should go to jail. Forget them. And it also takes away from the peaceful protest. But for whatever reason in this country, it seems like right now, we get distracted so freaking easily. And we've got to just understand, man, look, it can be both. It can be both. I am outraged by George Floyd's murder, and I am outraged and by the shooting of the police officers in St. Louis. You can be both. You should be both. And for whatever reason, it's like people want to act like you have to choose one side or the other. This ain't Chipotle. It ain't like you got to choose the steak or the chicken on your burrito. You can have both here, and you should have both here. And for whatever reason, it just seems like people don't seem to get that, and we keep getting lost. The one thing that I do love is it seems like the general population as a whole is not getting lost in this, but we do keep trying to have arguments to try to pull everybody to one side or the other. And I would say this, don't trust those arguments, man. Don't trust those arguments. It's not okay to target police. It's not. It's wrong. And those people should go to jail, and that's murder. If it's murder what happened to George Floyd, it's murder what happened to those police officers in Dallas. And it's wrong, and we should seek justice for all of that, because that's what we're called to do. And that's our job as Americans. Our job is to stay focused on these things. But let's not take away, because of the lootings that are happening, because of the things that are happening, that does not take away from what happened to George Floyd and the fact that we've got a huge problem when it comes to race relations in this country, especially when it comes to the police department. I'm like, it doesn't, saying Black Lives Matter doesn't take away from all lives mattering, but you can't have all lives matter if Black lives don't matter. So it's okay to say that. That's okay. Like I mentioned earlier about the Carl Lentz thing, where he says, I mean, when Jesus said, blessed are the poor, he also went to other things that are blessed later on, but at that moment, he was addressing the poor. At this moment, we're addressing Black lives, and that's okay. And it doesn't take away from the fact that all lives matter. But you can't, again, say all lives matter if Black lives don't matter. So right now we're focusing on this, and we're going to keep focusing on this, and it's going to get fixed. And I do feel like this is a turning point in our society. And I love that this moment is absolutely happening right now. And I hate what it took for us to get there. But when you see literally all 50 states and 18 other countries, it is, I'm not saying it's the most effective or it has been yet, but it is the largest civil rights movement in the history of the world that is going on right now, and you're seeing it in your country out there. And while there are other terrible things that are happening, there are people that are using this moment for them to create chaos, let's not completely let this take away from the fact of what's going on in our country right now, and that we're seeing justice. And if you're a Christian, if you pick up that book and you see how many times that the Lord tells you to seek justice, then you understand that this is getting us in line with the Lord's will, and I am all for it right now. Still, put those people that are looting, put those people that are vandalizing in jail, put those people targeting police in jail. At the same time, put those police officers and the people who are targeting are in the Black community in jail as well. And it's okay to have both. It's okay. Thank you guys for listening to my soapbox. I appreciate it. Will West here. Thank you to Eric Kane. Thank you to Logan Ward. EA Show with Brian Rice is coming up next. This is the starting lineup, 99.1 The Sports Animal.